All right, let's go. You're rolling with J&J to start your Monday on 92.9 FM ESPN. Yes, welcome to a new week, August 17th, and congratulations to one Scotty Scheffler. My goodness, was he fantastic in winning the FedEx St. Jude Championship. Just left us, I was just looking at John, just left us shaking our heads. His greatness, won by 8 strokes. With a 4-under 66 on Sunday, finished 17-under with a 263. Scotty Scheffler flexing. Congratulations to him. Read a bunch of good stories about not just the golf, but the volunteers that we had out there. And, John, I was holding on to them more this year. I was embracing those stories more because, obviously, as of right now, just one more in terms of having that elite status on the PGA Tour, the FedEx St. Jude Championship. We'll have the one more next year where you hope to, you know, emulate what was some great golf this weekend. We'll certainly be talking about it. We'll be talking about this too, John. 1 week out from week zero in college football. Do we have any kind of music or any kind of drop that could set a college football tone around here?
I don't know. I don't know. There you go. But it's not really us, though. That's the problem. This is SEC on CBS.
It's okay.
Right? You know, we're the AAC on FS1.
You know what, though? I put everybody on the spot with that one, and this did it, though.
On a Monday.
On a Monday. Whew. And on the spot, Brad Carson comes through again. The American.
That's what we do, man. We make it happen.
Is this the year, John, where Memphis gets back on top?
Oh, no, man. Charles Huff had a quote yesterday that poured some water on it, I thought.
Oh, no.
Yeah, I was a little nervous.
It's going to be good when we can start the football because that's the thing about having the last 4 or 5 weeks. We're so locked in on what's being said. Let's play the football. Let's play the football, Dan Mullen. What you got for us?
You going to let the whole song play? You gonna let the whole song play? That's what Joe Theismann would ask.
We should.
Let's let it play. Enjoy.
It's how excited we are about college football. Really is. It's emblematic.
It's insane.
All right.
There we go. We've done it.
Kind of in the mood now.
I like it. We're gonna play the whole thing, Joe. We're gonna play the whole Memphis Tiger fight song on the show today. Yeah, maybe I'll add this impromptu to our cap or no cap that we'll get to in just a minute. But yeah, we're officially a week out from week zero, which really means we're 2 weeks away from football. That's just a nice way of saying it. But I get it.
It's less than 2 weeks. I mean, yeah. What, August 29th?
Yeah.
I mean, yeah. Some of us are counting it down.
We got two more work weeks, you know what I mean? But it's our last full dead week without college football, so... I know it's an exciting time around here for sure. Hopefully after week zero, it remains exciting. That's always the risk with these kinds of games.
Oh, yeah.
But it at least will be exciting leading up to it. So, yeah, good stuff. 2 weeks out. And Memphis will kick off its season. Got NFL preseason games underway. Got week two of that. Like you mentioned, Scotty Scheffler won the FBSJC 8 strokes, an 8-stroke victory, which I believe would his second of his career, which would be tied for a second in the last 40 years. Oh, by the way, there's a gentleman named Eldrick Tiger Woods. He had 10 such of those.
Who?
10 such wins.
Who?
By 8 strokes or more.
Who?
One of the gentlemen that was behind Scotty finished second with 9-under, you know, at 9-under, said, yeah. I wanted to win so bad, but Scotty played so good. So, he was just locked in on Sunday.
He's the best.
Yeah, he's the best. And I'm glad for that tournament that it's the, you know, number one player in the world. It's a name that everybody loves.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, for him, I didn't realize it had been so long. He opened the PGA season with a win, and he had not won since.
Most consecutive multi-win seasons last 40 years.
Yeah.
On PGA Tour. You got Phil Mickelson,
mm-hmm.
Lefty with 6. Scotty Scheffler now tied with Tiger Woods at 5.
Wow. So, I mean, Scotty's going to break the record, right? You have to believe.
You would think so.
Yeah, so.
He's going to at least tie it next year.
Yeah, it was a sweet scene, right? His family was here, and he hugged the kids. And it's always, we talk about, you know, names winning this tournament. So,
a level of dominance now with his second tour win this year that you only see with the greats.
Yes, exactly. So great weekend for Memphis. Jim Nance, it was great. they had the, I don't know if you were watching. I was actually watching some of it. They had the drone shot of the pyramid, you know, and Jim Nance was like, a lot of basketball games in there. Memphis State. I'm like, yeah, not so much. I mean, it might be more like when I think about the pyramid, I think about the Mid-South Coliseum, although I know we did play some games in there. But did we play them as Memphis State is the question in the pyramid? Or had we moved to the University of Memphis?
How long has that changed? 94-ish? 93-ish? Yeah. I never remember exactly the year, but that might jive. That might jive.
Yeah.
In terms of when we played it.
Yeah. So they went to They went to the University of Memphis in 94.
Mm-hmm.
When did they move to the pyramid is the question.
A good little history lesson for you to start the show.
Well, and again, I appreciate the gesture, you know, from Jim Nance. Like, he associates that 91. So there were some Memphis State years in there. So, you know, 3 years in there where they were Memphis State. So not inaccurate by Jim Nance, but it was just nice. He gets the history, obviously, being from Houston. And
I mean, Penny's debut was in that thing.
Yeah.
If I'm not mistaken.
Yeah.
And you had some moments there that were nationally relevant that folks would remember, including Penny Hardaway.
Yep.
That's the main one.
Absolutely. The Tomb of Doom,
mm-hmm.
as they say.
Mm-hmm.
So that was cool. It was cool just to, you know, and that's why we used to, you know, that's one of the things that you miss. If the tournament leaves and you don't have that CBS broadcast, and you don't have the national platform that you're, and inevitably you lose that, you know. It will just not be the same spotlight. It will not be the same showcase. So, I thought it was a great spotlight and a great show for Memphis, obviously. And anytime it's a real bona fide name like Scottie Scheffler, it just makes it even better. So one more year in this format that we know of for now. And if that's the second to last one, then I'd say it was a huge success. So
Real quick, shout out to Colin Cody, who did a story about Sellers Shy. If you're not familiar with Seller Shy, works for CBS and has been doing basically the directing of the tournaments on television for years now. It goes back years now. I was not familiar with Shy's story. He is a Memphian and from here. And so obviously when you're putting Memphis on for the rest of the world on stage, you know, as a Memphian who's doing that, there's a great deal of pride involved with that. And Colin Cody over at WREG-TV, I thought, did a great job. Others jumped on the story as well. And maybe some had told it beforehand, but that was the first time I had seen it told. And Colin Cody over at 3 did a fantastic job telling it. I was not aware. Only 3 guys have done this, apparently, over the long history of CBS Sports in terms of the directors of these tournaments, in terms of the name. I don't have it in front of me, the official name. But he's a Memphian, and again, you know, special. So we always say there's a Memphis connection. Well, besides the location here, you have a Memphian that's been doing this, and now, you know, knowing that it's coming down to what its final years or so, really special to have him doing it for us, to put Memphis on for the rest of the world, as he's continued to do. Sellers Shy is the name.
Yeah.
For those that don't know that story, you can go check it out over at WREG.
Yeah. All right, lots to get to on the show today. Dan Wilkins is going to join us at 10 a.m. We'll talk to him about college football. Obviously, like you said, we're, you know, just officially, I mean, less than 2 weeks away. 12 days, I guess, is the technical truth. Or is there a game on Thursday? Do we have a week zero game on Thursday? It doesn't matter. Week zero is next week, and we'll talk to Dan Wilkins about all of that at 10 a.m., get his thoughts on college football at large, and more. So that is the show today. But we have a lot to get to, and let's do a little thing we call Cap or No Cap.
Cap, it means lying.
You're lying. That's cap.
No cap means I ain't lying.
No, no cap.
It's Cap or No Cap on 92.9's J&J Show.
All right, let's keep it with the golf tournament. The golf tournament, as we know it, not done in Memphis. Is that cap or no cap?
I think it's done. I'm not holding out hope, but Munz has got a story up over at commercialappeal.com that perhaps we should. Is it too late to reconsider? Apparently, when the numbers come out, they're expected to be ticket sales highs, attendance highs, and barring an announcement as of this morning, mm-hmm. I think there's still at least one stop in terms of the new championship series that's to be announced. again, is this holding out hope feels sort of like what we've done with Memphis Athletics and sort of, you know, hoping to get pulled up to a new conference. That said, is it too late for the PGA Tour to reconsider Memphis's fate? Here's to hope. Munns has got the column up over commercialappeal.com. If you want to hope, you can go right ahead. But I think the PGA Tour, in allowing that to be announced last week the way it was ahead of the tournament, you know, it'd have to take a serious change of course, change of heart, change of
right,
maybe feeling on in terms of FedEx. And I'm not suggesting FedEx should or anything should change. But my point is, I'm not holding out hope. I was surprised actually to read that that we're, you know, still perhaps not quite done. But I think it's just a formality at this point. I don't think the PGA would have let you go as far as they did last week, right before the tournament,
right,
if there was a chance it changes. But maybe, you know, 99%, 98%, maybe there's a chance. Yeah, maybe there's a chance you can still turn that around.
I don't know who, you know, Munns talked to. I don't know what made him, you know, what provoked him to write that. I mean, the problem is that it's about the money. It ain't about feelings. It ain't about sentiment. It ain't about doing the right thing. It ain't about charity, because we got all that. That's the whole deal. We got that with St. Jude. They had the CEO of FedEx on yesterday, talking about how much money that you know has been raised for. I mean, so we got all that. It's about money. It's about the finances, and that's what the new direction of the PGA. It's not the new direction. It's what, you know, every ultimate league is in it for that reason. But I mean, because it is about the money, and because FedEx is coming off the board, what is the incentive to keep an event a one of few premier events? I mean, we're talking about a 12 event calendar. What would be the incentive to come back to Memphis if FedEx is not bankrolling it? I mean, you could say St. Jude, but we already got that. So, I mean, I think this is just – so I get it. I mean, I appreciate it. I mean, there's nothing – it doesn't hurt you to have hope generally, but I just feel like in this particular instance, we've been told, you know, like we've been told that it's leaving.
Again, I'm not going to read his whole column. You can go over and read it. He said whispers began rippling around the course as the week played out that there still might be hope.
Right.
As he points out, they're going to point to the attendance numbers. And listen, you had the tickets with the, you know, the all-inclusive food that obviously helped.
Yeah.
The tickets, the attendance, they're going to point to that in hopes of all of the, 23 of the 24 sites have been announced. There's still one. And so it's just a matter of holding out hope.
Yeah, no,
I agree. I don't think it's really at this point, you're setting yourself up for disappointment if you do. That said, those that are, I'm not going to fault them for doing so.
Sure.
Because the event was so well done again.
Yeah.
On a national stage.
Yep.
This weekend.
Well, and again, I would say too, like,
it's always been a success.
If you work in the events business in Memphis, which I assume that's who Munns spoke to. A prerequisite for the job is being a hopeful person, because like you're not gonna be successful at a place like Memphis in the events business trying to bring things here unless you just have what I would even call an irrational level of hope. Like you have to have an audacious, you know, Barack Obama wrote the book, The Audacity of Hope. It's one of my favorite literature works of all time. I read it when I was 16 years old. I think this was before he was president. I think this came out before he was actually the president. But you know, you have to have the audacity of hope if you're going to work in the events business in Memphis. So, I mean, I don't doubt that there are definitely people out there in the, you know, in the inner workings of the event that have hope, because hey, it ain't over till it's over, right? The tournament hasn't left until it actually leaves. But I just ultimately feel like the direction is so plain to see with the PGA. And Memphis is just so much of the antithesis for that, that I just – and again, we'll be fine. It's like you said at the beginning of the story. St. Jude's is going to be fine. FedEx is going to have Memphis' back in some way. Like, they're not just going to neglect the city if this leaves. Like, they will find ways to continue to impact the city in a positive way.
Yep.
Will it quite be the stage that we had with the FESCC? No. Maybe go find some, bro.
Yeah, no, I said Memphis. My initial was Memphis will be fine. It's a blow for St. Jude. I mean, if you've raised $86 million for it, I guess you're going to be closer to it, $100 million. through this tournament over the years. Like, that number is going to go down.
Yeah.
It will be, in the end, fine. I said they were the biggest loser.
Right, right, right.
To be honest with you. And the point you made that I thought was the best, PGA Tour don't give a damn.
They don't care.
In terms of the relationship with St. Jude and what it's done for them. Otherwise, we wouldn't be having this conversation. You just had a packed-out gallery. Everything else, it went off without a hitch again, and you're making a ton of money in terms of the fight against childhood cancer. There's nothing bad about that whatsoever. PGA is moving on. And so from that standpoint, yes, the St. Jude is a loser in the sense that its story does not get told in the same elite way that it has for now, 68, 67 years, whatever it is now. That's unfortunate. Memphis will be fine because FedEx has got Memphis's back.
Yep.
And here's the thing. This tournament, hey, you're not going to get these top guys anymore, and it's good they're going out like this. It sounds like you'll be a part of this Challenger Series, but it will be earlier in the year.
Yep.
You know, that's the other part about it. You're not going to be doing it in this heat. And for everything I heard about how great the tournament was, it was still all framed with, my Lord, it was hot out there.
Yeah.
And that's the thing I don't think any of us are going to miss. Once you get this thing to the other side, you get an event that's a little bit more, you know, cooler temperatures, or at least tolerable temperatures, and we'll see what it looks like from that point.
Yeah. So anyway,
but you and I are on the same page.
Hopefully, the hope is placed, and you know, the hope is always good. But I expect the worst, hope for the best. I expect the tournament to leave because they've stated those intentions.
I'd hope for those kids they can get it turned around, or at least something that benefits them in a way that's, you know, still super effective. Some sort of relationship with that term.
What Charles Huff said on Saturday concerns you, cap or no cap. Now, I don't think you've maybe seen or heard this, but you know, he's given media availability every day, so ultimately he's going to say something along these, you know, days leading up to, you know, the first game of the season where, you know, you're going, huh? And for me, this was the first one. Jonah Dillon had the clip. I'm just going to read you the most important part of it. Quote: "They're tough. I don't know how many games we're going to win, but it's going to be a dogfight when you play us." So hearing that, does that concern you, or is that just coach speak?
You start on this one.
I am going to say it concerned me.
Yeah, I think we heard it in your your open.
Now, I also understand the business of hedging.
I was going to say.
I understand the business of hedging, and you're certainly not going to say, we're going to win a ton of games. Nobody ever says that. You know, nobody ever says, you know, we're going to go out there, we're going to win 12, you know, but nobody does that. But to preface it by saying I don't know how many games we're going to win almost feels like you're trying to, you know, you're trying to soften the blow a little bit. Like, maybe you're out here, you're watching practice, you didn't get the best pieces from your Southern Miss team, and you realize the difficulty of the schedule. He's also been talking about, because I think the other thing too is that it's very jarring from what he has said also this offseason, which is we got recruiting visits set up for the American Conference Championship game. We already did that. So we go from that to, I don't know how many games we're going to win. It's just kind of like, I don't want to say he's talking out of two sides of his mouth, but it does feel like he's come down a peg a little bit. Just, it's one quote. I don't want to, it may not be his large mentality, and I'm picking this out, but it's a different energy than what he has said in previous stops in the offseason. So my eyebrow went up. That's all I can say about it. My eyebrow went up a little bit.
That's fair. I think he's been clear. He knows he's got to win. He's said it out loud. He's got to win fast. That doesn't mean winning a bunch of games that don't matter. That's what Ryan Silverfield did ultimately. He knows that. He's. I don't know if he's talking about a specific number here that he doesn't know, but he's pretty much come out and said, like, I get it. I got to close the gap. And listen, if you're at a point now where you've seen him for a couple of weeks, like you said, you've been at this talking thing for the last three, four weeks. You're looking for something new and original to say, and I don't know that there's much else out there now. He, to me, has seemed supremely confident.
Yep.
Maybe in some way, this when you've been there all sort of off-season and preseason, this sounds like you're coming off of it a little bit. I don't think he is whatsoever. You went all in here with the schedule. You had a choice again to pick an FCS and play it up to Arkansas State, to play up to Boise. You decided, no, we're going to push all our chips in early and put Dan Mullen and UNLV on the schedule. I think this is an all-in coach who, no, I don't think he's backing off anything he's saying. I think it's hard to say we're going to come out here and win them all every single time you're asked. And
right.
if you're asking for a number of wins, I don't think any of us know exactly what the number should be. actually, too, when you've got all these road games that they've got, and no one in terms of the betting, in terms of the books, have got you as the favorite, mm-hmm. how should he be talking? I think for the most part, he's been as confident as he can be.
Yep. No, I mean, it's not an easy thing. And again, like, we don't know anything about this roster. We don't. I mean, the win total is 7.5. It's fine. It was just a shift in energy. Is all. I'm not trying to like penalize him for it. I mean, it's certainly understandable. And like I've said before, if they finish 8-4,
mm-hmm.
It's his first season. Like, it's a tough schedule. Ryan Zimmerfield never had to play two road games like this in his entire career at Memphis. Like, he'd play one. He'd get like the and like from my off the cuff, it was like at an awful Florida State team. You know, a year when Norvell was like talking about getting fired and they couldn't because of the money. So, I mean, I do have grace. If they if they finish 7-5, obviously it's going to be disappointing. But it's just like my whole thing with Memphis is they were perfectly, and I'm talking about the administration, they were perfectly happy with Ryan Zimmerfield not getting the conference championships. Like, he was in no danger of losing his job. Like, he had an ironclad contract. Now, it's got
to again, you had to try to raise the money to fire him. Like, as you said, no appetite.
Right.
You know, he's satisfying it enough with the wins he was getting.
How is it fair to say, you know, oh, if Charles Huff doesn't do this, I mean, you know, you got to give him more than one calendar year, one opportunity. So, and again, I think they overloaded it. I mean, you're going to UNLV and Boise State twice in your first three games on the job. It's very difficult to do. No Power 4 job would sign up for that. Like, they just wouldn't.
Boise has you and it has Oregon.
Yeah.
If you just have Boise.
Yep.
Can you be in the CFP conversation if they beat you?
No.
No.
Yeah.
I mean, so the one thing about UNLV is it gives you another shot, right, in terms of staying in that conversation, mm-hmm. having more, because you don't have the Power 4 opponent. That's what Arkansas changed on you.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's. I mean, you can go the other route if you want to, but there would be less excitement, and we would be talking about, man, you know, this FCS opponent. As I said last week, what do you need to see, John, to sort of believe that this team's going to be ready for Boise by week two after it plays Arkansas State here?
Mm.
Give me the all in,
yeah,
because that's, frankly, it's where the athletic department is now.
Well, they are,
and so yeah, you'd have been out if you just scheduled the FCS. Arkansas's coming off. You have a choice there.
Mm.
You schedule the FCS, bro. We're not talking about football for the first 5-10 minutes here. We're waiting until next week because, again, the stakes aren't nearly as high
right.
to start the year. I'd rather have it this way.
Well, we'll see, right? I mean, we'll see how we feel, you know, on August or September 1st, I guess, when we come back in here and, or, you know, we'll say, was it a good move? Was it not a good move? And because, you know, they are 6.5-point dogs. They got a new quarterback out there, so we'll just see how we feel. I mean, obviously it does depend on what they do.
Yeah, I mean, you're investing more technically than they are. You're the full rev share.
Yeah.
So go out there and play them and show it, man.
Yeah. Yep. All right. Let's go to the Hall of Fame. Amari Stoudemire gave the most and is the most boring Hall of Fame induction.
Well, yeah. I mean, it's for me personally, it's no cap. I listened to Amari Stoudemire, who was part of the is it a 9-member? I believe it's a 9-member induction class into the Naismith Hall of Fame over the weekend. Again, there was a lot going on over the weekend. Not sure how many of you all caught parts of this. Doc Rivers also went in. Candace Parker went in, and her speech was fantastic.
Mm-hmm.
I don't want to attack. Get caught up here and oh, Jason's laughing at Amari Stoudemire, whatever. It is interesting. I was listening, wonder if he would mention the University of Memphis, who, remember, at one point he was committed to, was he signed to at one point? He decides eventually, obviously, he's going to skip college and go straight to the pros. You did get a University of Memphis mention. It was brief. That said, you're talking about a guy who never won a title. Yes, played a long time in the league. But the whole time he was talking, I was thinking about how Amari Stoudemire never really changed the game in terms of for big forwards and everything else. I know we say this about some guys, and we don't about others, but about a lot of Hall of Famers we do. And it got me back to thinking, and again, a lot of the conversation has been about what he's going to do here in year 9 with his college basketball team. But it got me back to thinking about, man, if we're already putting the Amari Stoudemires, who didn't win a championship, I know Penny didn't win one, yep. but Penny was changing the game.
Yep.
And I think it's Tim Hardaway Sr.'s in now and Grant Hill's in now. And I know, you know, some of these guys are, you know, ended up winning championships or everything else. You saw T-Mac, and he's been in for a long time. Like, those guys, too, were faces of the league there for a while, that in a way that Penny was first. And I just think it was ridiculous that we had to listen to Amari Stoudemire talking about when. And I know it means a ton to him. Again, this is not an attack. Mm-hmm. I think the NBA is doing it wrong here. But we had to listen to him talking about winning a title in Tel Aviv as sort of the highlight of his career. Not an NBA title. Not changing the game. Keep in mind what Penny's shoe has done.
Yep.
The way it's changed basketball culture and basketball shoe culture. And I just think the NBA is missing the boat here on guys who had impact on the league in terms of its focus now on longevity, on numbers, and everything else. I'm not saying Amari doesn't belong, but we should be getting folks like Penny in before guys like Amari Stoudemire get in. I think Marc Gasol's up next year.
Yeah.
And so we'll be talking more about Hall of Fame. But, man, we're past time. I know he's been a finalist to get on the list before, mm-hmm. but and I don't want to, you know, every single year, I think we probably do at some point stop and say Penny should be in. But this,
right.
when Amari Stoudemire's getting in, and again, it was like just listening to his just droning on about a career that, sure, it made him a ton of money. He traveled the world, meant a ton to him. And there was a lot of doubt in terms of whether or not he would ever live up to this from the family situation he came from. There's a great story in Amari Stoudemire's story. I'm just telling you, Penny Hardaway should have been in for guys like Amari Stoudemire. It's like we're losing common sense here when it comes to the Naismith Hall of Fame.
Yeah, I feel like his career was good. It was really good.
Amari Stoudemire.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I don't feel like it was like Hall of Fame level, though. Like, to your point about influence.
Did you change the position? Did you win multiple titles? Did you, you know?
I mean, he's a six-time All-Star. That's good. That's really good. That doesn't feel like a Hall of Famer, though. I mean, Rookie of the Year, six-time NBA All-Star. There's a lot of six-time NBA All-Stars. I mean, really?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I don't know. You know, that never led the league in scoring.
Never was a first team. Right, which I think
one time
first team. Penny was two-time first team.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know.
You can't keep holding injury against Penny when he changed the game. And the fact is, his shoes are immortal.
Yeah.
It shows the lasting power of this guy. Like, folks still talk about him, you know, whether it's those old stars or whatever else, with a reverence, man. That again is symbolic of where he should be.
Yeah,
frankly, in terms of. He's up there in our eyes, in former players' eyes, in terms of the player that he was. He should be sitting up there in the hall, too.
Yeah.
It's ridiculous.
All right. Former Memphis Redbird Joshua Baez had the greatest debut in baseball and sports history on Saturday against your Cubs.
No cap. Greatest debut in baseball history. Brad, give yourself and Joshua Baez, the former Redbird, a round of applause. My Lord. Also helped the Redbirds win the season series, I believe, against the Cubs 7-6. Congrats again. Round of applause. Also, Redbirds, I'm not looking at anything here. One game over 500, still in the wild card hunt, even though they got no business being there. I'm dead serious about that. No sarcasm. You guys are some scrap masters. But let me tell you this, you're more. There's future stars in that lineup in there. And there's a new Baez in the Cubs-Cardinals rivalry. Javi, move over. That was yesterday, long time ago. The new Baez is Joshua, former Redbird. Apparently he did something like this with the Redbirds in terms of a ton of homers in his debut.
He had four home runs against Nashville in July.
How about that?
Here in Memphis.
There you go.
Four in one game.
How about that?
Nobody's ever hit three home runs in their first three major league at-bats ever. So it's hard to say that it's not the best major league baseball debut, at least for a hitter, certainly. If you want to put some pitchers up there, it's really a different thing. But for hitting, three in first three at-bats.
That's pretty amazing.
We could not get this kid out.
Could not get him out.
He's been in the minors 5 years is what's crazy. I had no idea.
Yeah.
That somebody, this Studley's been down there. You know, toiling for a minute to try to come up and break through. This dude is a stud.
I mean, I feel like
could we have, like, where was the marketing for this kid? I mean, is he down there just hitting dingers?
Well, I mean, he went 0 for 5 yesterday.
Right. I mean, you know,
so maybe that's something, you know, I don't think he's having every day. He's not like 3-4 home runs like we've seen the one he had with the Redbirds, 4 dinger day. And then, yes, you know, 3 dinger day on, what was that, Saturday?
Yeah.
My Lord.
He has a little bit of a boomer bust, so they're trying to work on his strikeout ratio.
Schwarber had that to start his career. Well, like a bunch of guys, I mean, start out that way.
Isn't that like, well,
PCA was boomer bust.
If you're
to start.
Home run hitter, I mean, even Ohtani, it's like home run or strikeout,
it's
right?
It's kind of how baseball is now.
Yeah. It's like you're going yard or you're striking out.
I had several people text me, why did we not know about him in Memphis? Several. Like 3.
That's what I'm saying. He's been in the minors 5 years, so it was weird to see the highlight of him doing this as a Redbird.
Yeah,
but he hasn't been with the Redbirds that long, right?
I mean, no,
he's only been with them for this season.
This season, yeah,
I think.
Mm-hmm. So he'd been Double A.
He was with Peoria in 2025. Mm-hmm. Yeah,
that's what I'm saying.
Slow
five
progression
years.
Here. Yeah.
But he's only 23.
Yeah, he's still young. They got him super young.
Yeah, this is. I mean, I guess this would be my question about.
Yeah,
this is what I don't understand about baseball, right?
Yep.
Like this kid comes in, you know, he does something that nobody's ever done.
Yep.
Is he a star? Like, I mean, is this kid like, or are people like, you know, he, beginner's luck? I mean, what's the how are people talking about this kid?
They're talking about him like he's a future star right now. Again, baseball can leave you; it's unforgiving. He may never do this again.
Yeah.
I mean, like I said, if he's been in the minors 5 years, he could go back to a guy maybe. That ends up showing that he should be back down there. This might be the day of a lifetime for him, and it may never be like this again. Do you see how many people he had in the stands,
yeah,
too?
Yeah, whole family.
Looked like a whole section. This was in Chicago.
Yeah.
And so everything was sort of vibing for him.
Yeah.
And you never know, man. You might not be back like this. There was a dude named Tuffy Rhodes that hit 3 home runs for the Cubs 1 year.
Yep.
I don't think it wasn't his debut or anything like that, but just to say, like, a dude you never heard from again, in a way that he didn't set up and become some star. So this doesn't necessarily, I wouldn't tell you, cement future success.
Yeah.
But I think over the weekend, they were comparing him to best ever debuts by anyone in sports, period. Forget Major League Baseball.
Yeah, I think baseball's the one sport where you can fall out. And here's 2 examples. 1, Mark Whitten had 4 home runs in a game in 1993 for the Cardinals. If I said Mark Whitten, you probably don't know who he is. He had 4 in one game in 93. Mm-hmm. The other example I'd give is a pitcher who became a player in center field, which is Rick Ankiel. Rick Ankiel was supposed to be, you know, he had that great debut, had that great rookie year, and then he got the yips, and then he couldn't figure it out. It's like, baseball's weird, man.
Yeah. Yep. Yeah, it is. It's a very strange thing. But
you can fall off in a hurry.
I mean, if I was a Cardinals fan, I'd be like buying this dude's jersey. Like he's a star.
Yeah.
I mean, he's doing something.
He's good.
I think you gotta. I think you gotta accept it for what it is, which is it's never happened.
Never happened. That's right. This is history.
We have a lot of time to be cynical about baseball players.
Yeah.
You know, I think when somebody comes in and he does something that has literally never been done in baseball, I think you got to give him the benefit of the doubt. Maybe this kid's got it. Right?
I think the way his teammates were looking at him tells me they believe he's a future star as opposed to this was some freak thing.
Flash in the pan.
The way they were watching it and holding their heads like this is unbelievable.
Yeah.
Like, you know, you can do that and think you're watching something you'll never see again. I just got the sense that from what they see behind the scenes from this kid, they thought, we're watching a future star. Could be wrong, but I think they think they've got somebody that's going to be in that lineup.
Also, the way he sort of pimped the first hit, which was on the first pitch, the way he pimped it felt confident. Like
yeah,
it wasn't
he's got some juice to
him. You know, like if there are players who make their debuts and it's like, oh golly gee, I just did that. Like he looks the part, man.
Yeah.
I mean, he's got it.
Yeah. But that was very cool to see. So yeah, I mean, it's certainly in baseball hard to argue. I mean, it's like statistically, it's never happened before. So
at the time of his promotion to the big leagues, he was leading the minors with 36 home runs.
And he's been killing.
So he's a bopper already.
Yeah, people wonder like how do you just let a guy with 30 homers like toil in the minors without calling him up? I mean, I saw a little bit of that. I didn't go down too far in that rabbit hole, but I did see some of that. So anyway, great stuff. For the St. Louis Cardinals. Absolutely good stuff. All right, last one here. If you need wedding entertainment, hire Jessica Benson and her husband, Chris. Cap or no cap? This is one I'll have to answer because over the weekend, former producer of this show, John Roser, got married. Congratulations to John Roser.
and his lovely wife Jennifer. It was a great and sweet ceremony at Christ Methodist, and then the venue is it P Squared Premier Palace down there in downtown on Monroe. Beautiful setting, but you know, I have to say that you know, you learn a lot about people at weddings. You know, when you really see them, you know, we only see most of these people in a work environment, right, in a corporate environment. But when the sun set at this wedding, and obviously Ty Jerome was there.
Oh, that's cool.
No, he wasn't. I just made that part up. Oh, but it was a lot of grind city media people. But when the sun set and everything,
still cool.
You know, when the sun set, Jessica Benson and her husband, Chris, it's like they turned to werewolves on the dance floor, man. And I was like, I can't even begin to entertain stepping in that vicinity, in that radius.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I think they went at it, bro, for at least an hour and a half on the dance floor. No breaks. I would like come in, I'd come out, they'd still be there in the same place. Come in, come out, they still be. And it's like, I don't know how you are at weddings, but I'd never do the dance floor thing. Like, I might do like a one dance is like a little like joke or something.
Yeah.
But I'm off that thing, bro. You're not going to see me on the dance floor. Jessica Benson, the rug was getting cut. The rug was getting.
Good for them.
And left, laid to waste is the best way that I can say it. I mean, you know, another if this were a game, mm-hmm. and we were doing, you know, sort of post game MVP. You know, another gentleman who I think would absolutely have to be up there for honors, Devin Walker, man. That dude was also on the dance floor nonstop.
Devin Walker dancing as well.
You know, I'm just peeping. I'm like, all right, what's, you know? But Devin Walker was like, just, what, you couldn't remove these people from the dance floor.
Just a band of dancers down at GCM, huh?
Yeah, I think they had like.
How about Bennett? Was he on the floor as
Bennett
well?
Bennett was never, no. Oh. I think we knew that about our man Bennett, you know? I think we knew he would never be on.
I think that Chris Luther and Jessica Benson are holding on to their youth by not having kids. And they are able to remain young.
Oh, they are remaining young.
See what I'm saying?
They are remaining young.
You said they're out there for an hour, hour and a half?
I think that's
if
easily.
Once you have kids as an adult, and especially in your 30s, you're not going to be out there that long because you don't have that much energy.
Yeah.
After having kids, they age you.
Yes.
So clearly the decision they're making,
yeah,
and not having them, it's like the fountain of youth right now.
I mean.
And they're drinking from it.
They
and they're reveling in it.
100%.
Basically, they're laughing at all you others that are aging and getting older around them.
Yes.
And are in awe of how they're living.
Yeah. I mean, you know, my brother, the last wedding I went to, I think, was my brother's 2 years ago. And I gave a speech, but I would have never dared get on the dance floor, you know. So even when I was. You know, I don't know at what point. I don't think I was ever the dancer, you know. I imagine you were probably the same. Not really the dance guy.
I mean, I used to get out there.
Oh, you did?
Back in the day, though, yeah. Yeah, I mean, I've told the story about Denim and Diamonds all the time. Again,
yeah.
Those were the old days.
Right.
Are the old days.
But, you know, if
when
you,
I was young.
If you need someone to, the thing about a dance for a wedding is somebody's got to break that ice, right? Somebody's got to be the first to go out there and do it. Because nobody wants to be the first to go out there and dance by themselves. You know what I'm saying?
Were they playing that Billy Idol?
No, it was, you know, I don't really remember the.
Wedding?
No, there were like some, you know, swag surfing.
Okay.
They did the whole train thing, going on a train and ride it. Oh, you know, yeah. You had that.
That's standard for weddings.
Very standard, yeah.
What white wedding would have been great. Nice day for a white wedding?
I don't know. I mean, what
have you never heard that song? Billy Idol, White Wedding?
Yeah. I saw Mike Wallace down
Missed
there.
Missed opportunity.
Mike Wallace was in the building. So definitely, you know, always good to see him.
Yeah. I'm going to see him this afternoon. Mike's lost a lot of weight.
He has.
We might as well just say it. He looks fantastic. The man's been working hard.
He has. Always he's such a classy guy. He asks about my kids every time I see him.
Yep.
You know, just a true gentleman. He did not. I think he kind of did what he had to do and got on up out of there. But yeah, you know, I was like, all right, this is a Grind City Media wedding. You know what I'm saying? Like, what is a Grind City Media wedding going to look like in terms of the guest list?
Was Michael telling Bernard King stories?
No, he wasn't.
Okay, all right. He saved him. He didn't give you any of those old Bernard King stories.
Eric Hasseltine was in the building. I got a chance to rap with him. Got a chance to see Gary. Chris Vernon gave a great speech. You know, for Roser after it was all. It was very. You know, I used to live with Roser. We were roommates. Before he was our producer here, I lived with him for 3 months. I got in a relationship and you know explored something else.
Now both of y'all hitched up.
I've known Roser outside of work for a long, long time, and you know there was definitely I would say the majority of the time that I knew him, I suspected marriage life would just not be for him.
Mm-hmm.
But you know, man, he's really, and I'm really am proud of him. He's made some incredibly positive lifestyle changes that I think all this stuff goes hand in hand, right? Like I think he made some lifestyle changes, and it led to him meeting his now wife, you know, and he settled down, and he seems extremely. That's all you want for your friends, right? Just be happy and live a life that brings you some joy.
Well, you sound like you want to dance, but you're trapped in the closet.
Well, I don't want to dance.
That's what I just heard. I heard a man that's living through Chris Luther and Jessica.
No.
He wants to be free, but he can't really go out there.
No, that's.
You had an opportunity.
I had many opportunities. This,
and the way you talked about it tells me there's a little young man trapped in there that wants to get out and dance and show folks what he's got, but he's scared.
Well, I think it's like a respect. That's what you come away when you watch the performance of Jessica and her husband Chris, and they do it for so long.
A respect.
It's like
you're thinking about. I can't do that. I wish I could do that. I wish I could go out there and have that. Kind of audacity, go out there and really cut a rug.
I think they would welcome it. Yeah. I think they would. Anybody that would want to come out there, and I think they would. But it's like it's intimidating. It's like playing chess with, you know, Magnus dude. You know, like sure he'll play chess with you, but he's going to destroy you. It's like you're not in his weight class.
Mm.
So when you see Jessica and her husband out there doing what they do, like they're in their, you know, Macarena, Cupid Shuffle.
They sound like they're a bunch of wedding crashers is what they are.
That's
like
exactly
they do this
right.
And they're veterans.
Yeah,
so they know
that.
Every dance.
They are.
They're
going
to go out there and do it and make you feel small and trapped in the closet.
And it's not, I don't think it's an intentional thing, but I think they know what's happening.
Yeah, they know.
Look at us. We're still dancing 75 minutes later.
Yeah. Got y'all all
no
in
breaks.
Awe. Got
no
the
breaks.
Whole wedding watching them. They know what they're doing.
No media timeout. I mean, I've never.
We'll talk to her about this tomorrow.
Oh,
it was intentional. Make all y'all feel small.
But you know, I think for her, it's just another Saturday night, right? Like it's just another wedding. This is what she does.
Like Vince Vaughn.
Like for us, it's like my God, this is just an impressive. For her, it's like I do this.
She clearly left an impression on you, bro. Her and Chris.
Yeah, they just don't stop, man. They don't stop, and nor does Devin Walker, man. He was out there. He gets the honorable mention as well. I mean, he was right there in the middle of it too. So, anyway, it was great to see Roser get married. Pau Gasol obviously officiated it. It was a fantastic night for him and his lovely wife Jennifer. So, it was cool to be a very, very small part of that for sure. All right, we'll come back. Lots more to come here on the show. Dan Wolken going to join us at 10 a.m. Stick around. J&J, 92.9 FM, ESPN. Hey, yo, I'm feeling like Ray Charles with this NBA Hall of Fame class. Golly, this is horrible as these go. Hate to start that way, but here's a list for this year's class. Candace Parker, Elena Deladon, Amari Stoudemire, who we talked about in the Open. Shamik Holdsclaw, Joey Crawford, Doc Rivers and Mike D'Antoni, and Mark Few. You have, I believe, two coaches in Mark Few and Mike D'Antoni who have never won a championship. I don't think Mike D'Antoni ever won. Maybe he won one as an assistant, but I know he didn't win one as a head coach. That 7 seconds or less did not produce a title.
And Doc's got one because of who the players were that he coached.
Right. But he got one at least.
Big three were actually sitting up there, by the way, at one point.
Yeah.
You know, those three, I guess they didn't talk to Ray.
Yeah.
But Ray and Pierce and they were all up there.
Yeah.
And Garnett.
This is a weak class, man. I guess.
I'm trying to tell y'all, but y'all won't start the Penny Hardaway to the Hall of Fame campaign because y'all don't care anymore.
I mean, Candace Parker and Elena Deladon make sense on the women's side. I mean, obviously, Candace Parker was, you know, a great women's player for a long time, and she holds, you know, most of, I don't know if they're records, but lots of plaudits.
If y'all remember this, I was watching a special on her once hated by her own peers in the WNBA, who voted her most overrated player. It's ridiculous.
Really?
They will gang up on you in the league. They will. Your own peers. And they once, and what a toll it took on her. She got very emotional talking about it.
Yeah.
Looking back on it. Voted the most overrated in the league by her peers. Candace Parker, who's been an absolute stud. What, one with the Sparks, one with Chicago, went back home.
Yep.
Dunked in games.
I don't know.
One for Pat Summitt. No, she wasn't first woman.
But she's one of the first.
She might have been first woman in tournament. In NCAA tournament, maybe?
Yeah,
I know she did it in the NCAA tournament. I don't know if she's first to do it in it. But I know she did it different, too, from just regular game.
Yeah.
But she did an NCAA tournament,
too. She was the first woman to dunk in a tournament game.
History!
Two dunks.
Amari never made history. Stoudemire. So Candace Parker belonged, bro. And then what she's done, as far I'll tell you this right now. She's as good as any man in terms of analyst work. She's fantastic. She's fantastic.
Yeah.
That she does. She's on that team with TNT, I guess, Dwayne and all those guys. I think she's better than Wade, to be honest with you.
Yeah.
So her speech was good. Candace was good. And yeah, I enjoyed the little special I saw on her over the weekend. Candace Parker deserving. Still gets very emotional talking about Pat Summitt. No, went up there that initial year, messed up her knee. She had to sit the whole first year. Thought about transferring from Tennessee.
Yep. Yep. She talked about playing for the other
team. Stuck with it.
You know, that was a big part of her speech, that she switched teams. We'll leave that for Jeffrey and company
to break
down. Well,
she used to go with Big Wendell. What's my guy?
Sheldon Williams.
Sheldon Williams. That's who it was.
Yeah.
Yeah. The Duke guy.
One of those things. One of those things. You know, Aleta Deledon, I feel like, I mean, I know she had, like, a great season, a couple of great seasons. Hall of Famer? Seven-time NBA All-Star, WNBA.
Yes, yeah. Hall of Famer. Yeah. She's a Hall of Famer.
The bar seems a little lower for the women. I get that, because you know you don't have as many, you know, long-term sustained success in the women's game.
Maybe again, it's why Penny is so open to doing these podcasts with some of the old heads, because it's gonna take them and a movement, man, some anger, to get him in.
Mm-hmm.
We're bringing in these young dudes now that haven't done anything.
Yeah.
Like Amari Stoudemire.
Yeah. Never won a title. You know? One first team.
And talking about winning a title in Tel Aviv and how it was the capper on his career. I said, get him off.
It is the basketball.
With all due respect.
Hall of Fame. Not the NBA Hall of Fame, but yeah.
But he had to talk about that because he didn't have the NBA title to talk about that everybody else was.
Right.
Again, I want Penny up there.
Right.
This is for Penny. It's not hate on Amari as much as it's love for Penny and an acknowledgement of how he changed the game.
Yeah.
But y'all hate on him now. You just want to focus on what he does as a college basketball or doesn't do as a college basketball coach. You're not angry about him not being in the Hall. You're angry about the coach he is.
Yeah, like last year it was Carmelo, it was Dwight Howard, Sue Bird, Maya Moore, Billy Donovan, Sylvia Fowles, and then that entire 08 Redeem team got inducted as a team. So I guess if you're a member of the 08 men's basketball team, do you say I'm a Hall of Famer?
I mean, Penny, wasn't it 96 that he was on?
Yeah.
But he's not. Were they going into? Did they get?
I don't know. I mean, they should.
I thought I saw that one of these teams, the Olympic team, is actually kind of going in. But that's not being in if you're Penny.
Yeah.
Being on that team is not what it should be. It's not the full being in.
Yeah.
That team's in.
Yeah, I don't know. I don't know how that works. Anyway.
You get a plaque, but that's not you individually.
Right. It's a collective.
The way it should be for
right.
Penny.
That team's in the Hall of Fame.
The shoe, come on. It's still a big seller.
Yeah.
Like, what are we doing?
Yeah. We'll have to figure that all out. At any rate, there you have it. The Hall of Fame inductions were this weekend. And like you said, the University of Memphis got a shout-out from Amari Stoudemire. Part of his basketball journey.
Thanks. Didn't even come.
Did not come.
Well, you can't blame him, though.
No,
he
I mean, he's
jumping. This wasn't a guy that went to Kentucky instead. Yeah. You know what I'm saying?
Different time.
Yeah.
So, anyway, there you have it with the Hall of Fame. We'll come back. Dan Wilkins is going to join us on the other side. We'll talk to him about college football and a lot more. Stick around. J&J 92.9 FM, ESPN.